Hello and welcome to Talking Tudors, a fortnightly podcast about the ever-fascinating Tudor dynasty. My name is Natalie Gruniger and I'll be your host and guide on this journey through 16th century England. Are you ready to step through the veil of time into the dazzling and dangerous world of the Tudor court? Without further ado, it's time to talk Tudors. Hello everyone, welcome back to Talking Tudors, episode 5. I'm your host, Natalie Gruniger, and joining me today to talk all things Catherine of Aragon is Wendy J. Dunn. Wendy is an Australian author, playwright and poet who has been obsessed by Anne Boleyn and Tudor history since she was 10 years old. She's the author of 3 Tudor novels, Dear Heart, How Like You This, the winner of the 2003 Glyph Fiction Award and 2004 runner-up in the Eric Hoffer Award for Commercial Fiction, The Light in the Labyrinth, her first young adult novel, and Falling Pomegranate Seeds, The Duty of Daughters, the first novel of a planned series telling Catherine of Aragon's story. While she continues to have a very close and spooky relationship with Sir Thomas Wyatt the Elder, serendipity of life now leaves her no longer wondering if she has been channeling Anne Boleyn and Sir Tom for years in her writing, but considering the possibility of ancestral memory. Her own family tree reveals the intriguing fact that her ancestors, possibly over 3 generations, had purchased land from both the Boleyn and Wyatt families to build up their own holdings. It seems very likely Wendy's ancestors knew the Wyatts and Boleyns personally. Born in Melbourne, Australia, Wendy is married and the mother of 3 sons and 1 daughter, named after a certain Tudor queen. Surprisingly, not Anne. She also has 1 amazing 19-month-old grandson. He calls Wendy Nan Boleyn. She gained her Doctorate of Philosophy in Writing from Swinburne University in 2014 and is a writing tutor and lecturer in their writing program, as well as the proud managing editor of Backstory Journal and Other Terrain. My conversation with Wendy straight after this musical break, courtesy of singer-songwriter Carlene. The song Winter Rose is from the Ballad of Anne Boleyn, Carlene's best-selling album inspired by the life of Anne Boleyn.
You love me like a winter rose, precious and unusual. Blood red petals kiss the snow, this alien.
My weeping head, will you love me?
precious and unusual. Blood red petals keeps the snow resilient to cold. You love me like a winter rose, precious and unusual. Blood red petals kiss the snow, resilient to cold.
Okay, welcome to Talking Tudors, Wendy. Can you share with us a little about yourself and your background?
All right, yeah. Well, I'm a writer. I write historical fiction and also non-fiction. Have my PhD in creative writing, which is lovely because I'm now Dr. Wendy Dunn.
Yeah, Dr. Wendy, that's right.
That's been a few years now. That was in 2014, which is amazing how time just flies.
Absolutely.
Well, I've been passionate about the Tudors all my life since I was about 10. I received a book for my 10th birthday, which was about British history, and there was a chapter in that book about Elizabeth I, and I fell in love with her, as right, most okay. of us do when we read her story. And yeah, so that's been the start of my journey, and that took me into reading historical fiction. And then by the time I was 17, I wanted to be a historian, but our life interrupts, as it does. But the, you know, all the reading I've done, in one day, once upon a time, in my 20s, I decided I wanted to write fiction. And it's been a long journey, but I'm still enjoying the adventure.
Fantastic. And so would you say it was that book that you, or the chapter in that book that actually sparked your interest in the Tudors in particular?
Oh, very much so. Very much so. It's amazing how reading and a book can change your life. And it's just the whole story about Elizabeth being the rejected daughter, and how her story is such a wonderful one of survival.
Yes,
and
absolutely.
You know, she's just, you know, amazing woman, very complex. I mean, I still love her, even though I know that she was not perfect, like all of us.
Absolutely, agree with you.
But amazing intelligence, and she was pretty spectacular.
Absolutely. And now, so Wendy, you've written three novels, is that right? Three novels that have been published about the Tudors. Do you want to tell us a little about those?
Yep. I've got three novels now. The first two, because reading about Elizabeth I took me to discovering about her mother, Anne Boleyn.
Yes.
So Elizabeth became my first hero, my life hero. And then discovering about Anne Boleyn's story as well. I just also fell in love with her story, and her, you know, she's just a very strong, amazing woman as well.
Yes.
Very much. Can see Elizabeth was very much her mother's daughter, and so the first two novels are about Anne Boleyn. The first one's through the point of view of Sir Thomas Wyatt. Always wanted to write a love story that of a man besotted. and I loved his poetry. I think it was a Margaret Iron book called, it was one of her Elizabeth series. I think it was Elizabeth and the Prince of Spain.
Okay.
And there's a scene where, in that book, when Mary Tudor wakes up after her wedding night with Philip of Spain, and there's a line that goes through her mind that in that moment of, and then she suddenly dawns on her that the line of this poem that's coming to her on her wedding morning is actually the lines of the poem that Sir Thomas Wyatt wrote supposedly to Anne Boleyn, and right, that's, okay. You know, she's just in horror that those, like, you know, because she obviously hated Anne Boleyn because of the fact that she saw her as destroying her life and her parents' life, especially her mother's life.
Yes.
So that really drew me to read his poetry, and his poetry is beautiful and very romantic, and you know, the images in his poetry are very, very strong, and I just felt like I just needed to tell his story, especially when I read more about the fact that there was this story that he may have been a lover of Anne Boleyn.
So that's your first novel, D-Heart? Yep.
That's right. And excellent. The second one, because that left, that actually, because there was a bit of a journey, because that came out in 2002.
Right, wow.
And, yeah, I know. Amazing. God,
that is amazing.
I don't know where time goes to.
I know.
And so after that, I actually did want to write about Catherine of Aragon, because I've got really interested in her and really attracted to her story as well through my research. And I did start writing what's now my third novel that's been published. But I just, you know, it just wasn't the right time. I think with writing sometimes, books have their own birth dates.
Oh, that's so true, isn't it? Absolutely.
That's right. So I had to be ready to write it, and time had to be ready for the story to be told. It is amazing how, you know, you just feel like things will just happen because it's the right time for it to happen.
Yes, yes.
So I started my Falling Pomegranate Seeds after Dear Heart, and I actually had an agent, and she did try to sell the first book to New York publishers, which was really exciting.
Yeah, that's exciting.
But after the 12th rejection,
right.
she said she wasn't going to send it out to anyone else.
No.
But she said, look, you know, you really should be trying to write young adult novels. I could really sell you if you wrote a young adult novel. And I hadn't expected that. And that kind of stunned me for a little bit. But it made me think about the fact that Dear Heart had left me with so many unanswered questions about what actually had gone on in the last year of Anne Boleyn's life, and why Henry VIII, who turned his kingdom upside down, as we know, suddenly turned into this man who was willing to murder this woman that you look at the letters that he wrote in their courtship. I mean, he was really in love.
He was besotted, wasn't he?
He was besotted. Mm. He was. I think most people. Do you agree with me that Anne Boleyn was his grand passion?
Well, I think so, and I think that's why it turned so tragic in the end. Definitely.
Yeah. A lot of love, and then it turns to hatred. Mm. And I do wonder about the theories about his concussion in 1536. You know, he was unconscious for at least 2 hours. I've read in other historical documents that it could have been 3 hours. And he does seem to be so changed. I mean, even, I suppose, you know, my feeling is that when he awoke to the fact that she'd lost the child, he actually went into panic about not having a prince. And leaving a legacy of civil unrest for his kingdom, you know. He was a king, and the worst thing he could have done is to leave no heir behind him. And he didn't recognise the fact that he had a daughter that could have been the queen. So my second novel was my attempt to answer those questions in my mind.
Right, okay.
Yeah, so I wanted to do it through I was always interested in the story of Catherine Carey. I years and years ago, I've read about the fact that, not the fact, that there's a legend that she may have been with Anne Boleyn on the scaffold. I first looked at it, because, of course, she's one of these women of this particular period that we don't really know what year she was born. And the first record that I looked at about Catherine Carey suggested that she would have been only 12. And I thought, Anne Boleyn wouldn't have a 12-year-old with her in the Tower of London and also to be on the scaffold to do all the things that she would have had to do after Anne Boleyn's death, clean up, you know, pick up the head and everything like that. But then I read another, years later, I read another document which put a lot of doubt on whether she was 12, and it actually sort of suggested that she turned 14 in 1536. And I thought, well, you know, 14 is there, you know, just tottering on the age that she could be there.
Yeah.
So I thought, I'd like to tell this story through Catherine's point of view, and the fact that she has the mystery around her that she may have been the bastard daughter of Henry VIII and Mary Boleyn rather than I thought, wow, that's a lot for a young girl to be grappling in teenager. So that's the second one.
Okay. Yes.
Yep. And the third one is Falling Pomegranate Seeds, which is the first book of my planned series on I don't know if it's going to be three novels or just two. It's still deciding.
Right.
The work will tell me.
Exactly. That's exactly right. And fantastic. And so why do you think we have this insatiable appetite for the Tudors still? After so long, we seem not to be able to get enough of films and books and plays and, you know, why do you think that is?
I think it's a very, very full-blooded age. These people live very colourful lives. We have the contrast of all the beautiful things plus all the ugly things in this period. We've definitely got characters which people can really connect to. We've got the rejected daughter, Elizabeth I and Mary I were both rejected daughters. We've got women who, in a sense, I suppose you can see what happened to Catherine Howard and Anne Boleyn as being the worst kind of domestic violence, where a man is supposed to be the person that loves them ends up murdering them. They're really strong stories, and they, you know, they are very tragic, and they also have a lot of triumph about them as well. So it really speaks to our human spirits.
I agree with you. I think they're sort of far enough in the past to be intriguing and fascinating, but not so far back that we can't connect with them, say like with ancient Egypt or the Romans. It's kind of difficult to connect personally, but with the Tudors it feels like we can make connections, can't we? And I know you've spent a lot of time researching Catherine of Aragon. What do you think makes her such a fascinating subject?
Well, she is fascinating.
She is, I agree.
I always find, I feel that people do her injustice because they always say, a lot of people say she's the boring wife.
She's the discarded one and that sort of thing.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly. Towed the line, did what she was basically told, blah, blah. But I actually think the thing is that women in this particular period, especially Catherine of Aragon, I would say that to me the fact that in the reign of Henry VII we've got a very much – he was our last – king of the Middle Ages in a sense in England. So we've got in that period of time things were pretty rough. We've still got stories about men peeing in palaces and everything like that, you know. But then when we switch over to the reign of Henry VIII, and he came to the throne as not quite 18, so he had his 18th birthday when he was crowned.
That's right.
And things changed. The court tightened up. Things became more beautiful. He definitely embraced being a Renaissance prince. And I really believe this is coming from Catherine Aragon's background. I mean, she came from a very beautiful, I mean, her mother, Aragon and Castile were very influenced by the Moorish culture.
Absolutely.
And so beautiful. You've been to Spain.
I have, and it is absolutely breathtaking. I know the architecture is really amazing, isn't it? It's like nothing you've ever seen.
Yeah, it's right. It just takes your breath away. Mm. And of course, you know, Catherine of Aragon had the last few years of her life in Spain, living at the most beautiful, one of the most beautiful places in the world, the Alhambra.
Yeah,
you can probably say it better than me.
It was an amazing palace.
Gardens and fountains and this architecture, which is just more than just architecture, it's true art.
It is, yeah.
And so, you know, in the reign of Henry VIII, we've got him spending a lot of money on his palaces and all the beauties and stuff like that. And I really think it's coming from her influence. And, of course, as we know, she was a patron, and she was actually a patron of Sir Thomas Wyatt too. She recognised that he was a talented poet, but he was not the only person that she gave money to because he was an artist or whatever.
Mm.
So, you know, she gave money to scholars and poets and supported them. And so we got a court that's not only interested in beauty, but a court that's interested in being intellectual. Mm. She was really recognised too by scholars as being can't remember which scholar it was.
Yes, I know that I'm thinking of a quote too, and I can't remember.
He said she was more intelligent than Henry VIII.
Yes, I will look for that, and I'll add it to the notes for our listeners.
Yeah, yeah.
Definitely. And in all this time that you've been researching Catherine, did you come across something, a fact or a story or something that really sort of surprised you, something that you thought, wow, this is, you know, really interesting?
I think the thing is that she's stubborn. I knew that the historians had actually said that, like, for instance, the most classical biographer of hers, which is Gareth Mattingly. He said that she was the rock that changed the course of British history. I think one of the things that my research is showing too is that I was sort of thinking, oh, maybe this is not quite true, but my research is showing that she was indeed a very stubborn woman. And but even though she was stubborn, she's stubborn for certain things.
Yes, yeah.
She knew when just to let, you know, if Henry was doing what she was happy with him to do, she was very happy to support him in whatever things that he decided to do. And the other thing that was interesting to me, having done a lot of research about her now, is that I really think that her pregnancies, I can see that a lot of her the loss of her babies were actually due to a lot of stress that was going on during her pregnancies. Like, for instance, she was pregnant in 1513 when Henry VIII decided that he wanted to be, you know, react Henry V, you know, go across to France,
yes,
and be the kingly king. And poor Catherine's, well, she's left as a regent. She's really happy about that because, you know, this is what her mother trained her to be. You know, her mother trained her not to be just the bed companion of Henry VIII, but consort to help him rule. And so, well, Henry VIII is over in France, and he actually, I think it's two towns that he actually captures while he's over there. the Scottish king decides that this is the perfect time to cross the border.
To try and invade,
These men, Natalie, these men astound me. Yeah. I can't remember, is it James the Fifth? No, James the Fourth. I'm not really good with my Scottish numbers.
That's okay, we'll check that.
But he's married to Margaret Tudor.
Yes.
She's pregnant too.
Mm.
She's pregnant too. She's already lost two of their babies, or even more, I think. She had a very bad she lost most of her children. I think she had about four children to her James, and so she's pregnant, and she's begging him not to do this. This is a silly thing that he thinks, you know, gather your army and take on England's army. And back in England, there we got Catherine, who's also pregnant, and she's having to organize things, you know, get the armies, I mean, the leaders sorted for the army. She's actually doing, she went from London to quite a distance outside of London, pregnant.
She was very hands-on, wasn't she? She wasn't just sitting back. She was, her mother's daughter in that example, definitely.
She was. And there's a historical document that suggests that she actually did a rousing speech to the army before they went off to fight James's army.
Right.
And of course, we know what happened then. We've got James dead on the battlefield, and she's actually writing to Henry VIII saying, "Look, you know, I did suggest to the English that we could send the body of the English king, of the Scottish king to you, but they said that's not really the right thing to do, so you'll just have to be satisfied with his coat."
Yes.
So, she definitely shows that she is very much the daughter of Isabel of Castile.
Absolutely. And so there are, as you're well aware, having been involved in you know, researching the Tudors for so long, there are many public misconceptions about Henry VIII and his queens. In your opinion, what do you think is one of the worst, I suppose? Maybe about Catherine, or maybe about one of the others?
One thing about Henry, which I reckon we need to really get rid of, he did not have syphilis. That's, you know, we can see that.
That does come up a lot, doesn't it?
It does. And then they say that Mary the First and Elizabeth also had syphilis because their father had syphilis. And, we have the records of what he was treated by his doctors, and we know the treatments that they gave to people who had syphilis in that period of time. It's a lot of things, isn't there? There's, like, for instance, with Anne Boleyn. She was not a whore. She definitely, you know, she. I could not imagine her ever having five lovers at all. She was stupid. Yeah, that's so ridiculous. I'm not sure. I mean, the thing is that, you know, it's Nicholas Sanders, wasn't it, who wrote about the fact that she had six fingers. And he was only 8 years old
She
was executed.
Absolutely.
And also that he describes her so wonderfully, you know, like she's got this big lump under her chin and the six fingers and all the rest of it. And of course, in this period of time, Henry VIII actually rejected I think it was Claude, the princess, Princess Claude from France, because she was crippled or had some sort of deformity. In this period of time, the Tudors regarded those sort of things as God not looking kindly down on you.
That's right.
So you could not imagine a king wedding someone who's obviously got, you know, this big lump under her chin or the six fingers. And
absolutely not. Yeah.
But I think most people realize that now.
I think so, which is really good, which is great, isn't it? Now, I'm sure that you've visited many places connected to Catherine and the Tudors. Do you have a favorite location?
Oh, gosh. I think it's Hever Castle.
Is it? Yeah. I love Hever.
I'd love to go back there. And I mean, I've been back there now twice. It's just, I know it's very changed because, of course, in the Tudor times, it was not as beautiful as what we've got now, because it's got the most gorgeous gardens. But the castle itself is so, I don't know, it just draws you in. And
it is, isn't it? It's beautiful. It's like out of a fairy tale, isn't it?
It is. It's like out of a fairy tale. What other places have I, been to that I've really loved? I think, you know, the places in Spain, you know, I would like to go back there. I've been wanting to do the Camino walk, because I do believe Catherine Aragon, when she left Santa Fe after she said goodbye to her parents, and that took 3 months of travel.
It was grueling.
She would have followed the Camino route. And I believe I have identified the route. So I really want to go there and walk some of it.
Absolutely.
So, you know, there's so many places, though. I like the Tower of London.
Yeah.
So much history there.
Fantastic. Yeah. There are lots of favourite places.
What's your favourite place?
Oh my goodness. That's a tricky one. I absolutely love Hampton Court. I think it just it is one of my favourites. Whenever I'm in London I go back. I think I've been 6 times maybe, but every time I go I sort of discover something new, which is what I love, something that I missed, you know, on a previous visit. So I absolutely love that. Another one that I really love and I think is unbelievably atmospheric is Sudley Castle, which is absolutely stunning.
I haven't been there. I've heard so many things about that, and I really do want to go. Oh, so there's still more places to go.
There's still more places. And have you been to Acton Court?
No, I haven't.
That's another one to add to your list. That's really stunning, and it's pretty much, it wasn't Victorianized, so you get a real sense of the Tudor wing and the way the rooms sort of moved, you know, from public to private. So that's another one to add to your list, Wendy. I just got a lot longer. Now, Wendy, we're almost out of time, but I want to play 10 to go with you. So we're going to do 10 quick questions.
Yeah.
Not really history related, just for our listeners to get to know you a little bit better. So are you ready to play?
I hope so.
Don't worry, it's nothing.
Do I have a prize at the end?
Nothing tough. Oh, yeah, I should do that, definitely. Okay, so name 2 items that are on your bucket list.
Oh, all right. So on my bucket list, I'd like to go to India.
Okay.
I've always been quite drawn to India and, doing some exploring there. Definitely want to do the Camino.
Excellent. I love those 2. What do you do to recharge?
Oh, goodness. I think my writing retreats are really necessary to my sanity. I go every year to a lovely place called Varuna in the Blue Mountains in Australia.
Yes.
And I spend 2 weeks there just really keeping my head down and writing. And I think one of the best things for a writer is to be able to have time to write and not have interruptions and stuff. So, yeah.
All right, wonderful.
My time at Verena.
Your time at Verena, great. And what song, do you have a song that kind of instantly lifts your mood if you're feeling a bit down or you've had a bad day?
Unchained Melody, I think.
Unchained
that
Melody, yeah. Okay, yeah. Great. What's one of your earliest...
Well, that's a love song, I know.
Oh, it's a love song, that's okay. what's one of your earliest childhood memories?
Oh, goodness. I think it's probably the earliest childhood memory I have is, well, one of them anyway, is sitting with my sister in a window. And it's an old house, and we've got this, one of those windows that rattle up. What do you call it? The ones that pull down. I can't remember.
Are they sash windows? That
yes, that's right, yeah. Mm-hmm. And there's a lightning storm happening.
Oh, I like that. That's a good memory.
Yeah, that's a very vivid memory.
It is, yeah. And can you name a favourite childhood book?
Oh, this is it. That's a very good one. Mm-hmm. Oh, look, it's got to be probably C.S. Lewis's series of the Narnia series.
Yes,
yeah,
excellent.
Yeah.
And what are you currently reading?
At the moment I'm reading so many non-fiction books. Mm-hmm. And I've discovered one of the things I thought I should try to do is educate myself more about how people behave at weddings and things in the Tudor times, and I know that they used to tell bawdy stories. So right, I found this book, which I'll share with you, and I've been quite shocked, Natalie.
Really? I want to know more.
It's a beautiful book. It's a beautiful book. It's got one side of it's in French and the other side's translated, and it's very randy.
Well, yeah, give us the title and we'll add it to our notes, definitely. Yes, what's a favourite holiday destination, Wendy?
Oh, gosh. England.
Yeah. London. No, how did I know you were going to
London.
And what does your writing space look like?
Messy at the moment.
Do you very have a study? Messy. So you've got like a...
I have a study. Mm-hmm. I have a study, and I've got... I'm looking at a portrait of Elizabeth I across from me, and I've got a shelf with a lovely... I've got Anne Boleyn... And Elizabeth, the Dalton ones, you know, the Anne Boleyn with the dogs. And really lovely. So it's nice to look at that.
That is lovely.
But a lot of mess around at the moment.
That's okay, not a problem. And what is one of your biggest pet peeves?
Oh, goodness.
What annoys you, Wendy? What's...
Well, it's too many things, actually.
Just one's fine.
One thing. Oh, goodness. I think people not being kind to one another.
I have to agree with you. And this is our last question. What is something most people don't know about you?
Oh, goodness. I think I tell... The thing is that with being a fiction writer is that you put so much of your own heart and soul, and I think I've probably, if you read through the lines, I've probably told everything about myself. So I don't think there's very much. I'm really an open book.
Okay.
There's not much there.
Oh, there's lots there. A lovely, beautiful person. And now, so I'm going to be asking all my guests that I interview to give our listeners a Tudor takeaway. So I'm calling it a Tudor takeaway. Yeah. So it's a little gem for our listeners to take away with them that might help them deepen their understanding of the Tudor period, or just to simply nurture their love of the era. Do you have a Tudor takeaway?
Yes, I do. I do. I discovered this book, and I don't know if you've read it, but if you haven't, you must get it. It's called The Youth of Henry VIII, A Narrative in Contemporary Letters, and it was written by Frank Arthur in 1870. Well, I don't know if he was... That's actually when he was born. So it's a recopy of a book that was published many, many years ago, but it's contemporary letters.
Okay, that sounds fantastic.
It's absolutely brilliant. So there's letters there from Catherine of Aragon. It's letters there from her father. Wow. Lots of letters there from Henry. So you get their real true voice, and you get also ambassadors writing about the court and descriptions and what people wore and ceremonies, and it's a wonderful book.
That sounds like a fantastic book. And you said it was by Frank Arthur, did you say? Yes. Well, he was the sort of editor. Fantastic.
I don't think it's the editor, because it's got, he was born 1872, died 1954. Right. So it's, The Youth of Henry VIII,
The Youth of Henry
A Narrative in Contemporary Letters.
So I love it. You know,
Yeah, you haven't read it?
No, I don't think so. I have, like, the title sounds familiar, so I'm wondering if I've at some point come across it. But no, I'm going to have another look for that, and I think our listeners will love to as well.
Yeah,
so Wendy, love it. Thank you so much for joining me on Talking Tudors. I look forward to chatting again with you very soon.
I'd love to. I'll speak to you soon, Nat.
Thanks, Wendy. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, that brings us to the end of this episode of Talking Tudors. Thank you so much for listening. If you have any comments or suggestions or just want to say hi, please get in touch with me via my website, www.onthetudortrail.com, where you'll also find show notes for today's episode. If you've enjoyed the show, please share the podcast with friends and family and click on the all-important follow button so you'll never miss an episode. It's time now for us to re-enter the modern world. As always, I look forward to talking Tudors with you again very soon.